This is Lightning Power Lunch with Dave Mishkin and Greg Linnelli on Lightning Radio.
They're a good team over there. They, you know, really well defensively they played. They're, you know, trying to keep us to the outside. It's, you know, it's tight checking games and, you know, bounce one way, bounce the other way. Maybe it goes in our favor. But, yeah, they did a good job down the stretch of, you know, it's tough in those games being down, especially in the playoffs when it's a one-goal game. They're just flipping it out. So, I mean, you got to give credit to them for doing a good job at that.
The first two games, you know, I think feel that desperation, you know, in these last two games and in the first two games, I think it would have been a different series. You know, they started on time and we didn't, and that's at the end, that's what cost us.
The good teams find a way, and we've certainly done that in the past, and they did that. So like I said, you have to give the other team credit. That's a really good deep hockey team, really good defensively, limit your chances, and we just, you know, we capitalized on a few that didn't count tonight. And that was the game plan, was to get some pucks towards the net, get some screens in front and some traffic, and we did that. It just didn't go our way.
The words were, to pull a goal off the board, it has to be unbelievably egregious. That's the standard, to pull a goal off the board. Well, the first one's on the board, and I couldn't find anything remotely egregious about that.
Oh, boy. I don't know where to begin. Oh, I know where we're going to begin. We're going to talk about the game last night.
Mm-hmm.
We're definitely going to talk about the two goals that were disallowed. Does the NHL need to change that rule? Maybe, maybe not. And where does Tampa Bay go from here? Although maybe we can touch on that a little bit more Thursday and Friday, since we're basically going to go till the end of the week. We are taping today's show because we can. Hit us up on X at Bolts Radio, but we're going to be here for you. There were some comments and questions that came in after the game last night. We started to take some of those yesterday as well, in terms of, you know, Steven Stamkos's future. What do you make of the team next year moving forward? Is this going to be part of a steady decline of this Tampa Bay Lightning team, understanding they came off back-to-back Stanley Cup runs. They made it to a third straight final. And then the salary cap does catch up to everybody. Is it going to hit the Lightning in a way that, you know, looks at it where they're competing but not competing for a title year in and year out? We certainly can answer those questions because some of you had those questions, and we'll dissect it. You heard Anthony DeClaire, Anthony Cirelli, you heard John Cooper, Steven Stamkos. I think I got everybody.
Yeah, you did.
That open. And we're going to break it down with you guys here. Dave Mishkin, of course, on that end. He had a front row seat to all of the games this series. Steve Versnick's our producer. I am Greg Linnelli. Partner, it's never fun when your team that you cover, that you call games for, loses. But I think before we get into the game last night, big picture, Florida Panthers is a really good team, and I have no problem saying the best team won this series. They are a heck of a team. They are deep. They are talented. And for the most part, they did a pretty good job of forcing the Lightning into some situations where they couldn't quite overcome in a seven-game series. Did the Lightning have some things go against them in this series? No doubt. And we're going to talk about that specifically today regarding the two goals that were disallowed. But look, you lose to the Florida Panthers, there's nothing to be ashamed of. That is a team who has Stanley Cup aspirations. They're probably where the Lightning were when they were going back to back. That's just kind of where their team is built right now and how everything is structured. And they're on a mission, and I wouldn't be surprised if they do plow through the East, but time will tell.
Yeah, and we can get into the controversial calls from Game 5, but here are my overall thoughts on the series. I agree with you. The Panthers were deserving of the victory. It's hard to argue that the Lightning should have won the series when you lose in 5. But I thought that beyond anything else, and these are kind of big picture keys, these are one team wins a series 4-1 keys. How did they do it? I think that there were two areas where they excelled. Virtually all of the big plays fell on the Florida side of the ledger, especially in their 4 wins. you can list them off. Whether it was the Bobrovsky save on Dumba in game two, the Verhaeghe power play goal in the opening minute of the third period in game one, the Sam Reinhart goal that ended the Lightning's big momentum surge in the second period of game three, the Montour goal that gave them the lead going into the third. At just about every turn in the four games the Panthers won, there were big plays to be made on both teams, and the Panthers were the ones to make the big play. And that often spells the difference between winning and losing a playoff series. But it wasn't only that they made the vast majority of the big plays. The biggest plays in the series were made by Florida. The other part to their victory was they ended up in their four wins. In three of the wins, they took a one-goal lead into the third period, and the other one, it was tied, but they grabbed the lead in the opening minute of the third. So basically, they had a one-goal lead in the third period in their four wins. They played championship-level lockdown defense in those four third periods. Now, they were good defensively for much of the series. They weren't perfect. I mean, the Lightning had some moments in the series when, you know, they made the Panthers uncomfortable. But look at the third period of games 1, 2, 3, and 5. I think Cirelli mentioned it in the clip we played. The Panthers were so good at protecting a lead because they didn't really sit back. They were aggressive in terms of limiting chances, but they were safe and solid, chipping pucks out, making the Lightning go 200 feet. I mean, I'm not sure how many scoring chances the Lightning actually generated in those four third periods. There weren't many. And how often do we say it, Greg, during the regular season? This is a tune-up for the playoffs. When you have a one-goal lead going into the third period, how are you going to handle that? Are you going to manage this game in a way that you limit opposition chances and get it across the finish line? And you drew comparisons to the Lightning's back-to-back cup teams, and that was a quality they had. They could lock it down in the third period when they had a lead. They did it in their elimination games. In other words, in the games where they eliminated the opponent in many of those series, in those eight series that they won. And frankly, in the next year too, 2022, when they got to the Stanley Cup final, they were able to lock it down in their third period victories, and in many of those victories, they were series clinching victories. So high marks to the Panthers. They are a team with championship pedigree. You're right. They're deep. They can score. They make big plays, and they can defend, and they get excellent goaltending. So they're going to be a handful for either the Boston Bruins or Toronto Maple Leafs, whoever they get in the second round. Right now, it looks like it's going to be the Bruins, but who knows? I mean, the Bruins blew a 3-1 lead last year to the Panthers. We'll see what happens. I think that the four games might have looked different, though, had the Lightning been able to play in the third period even or up. And this is where certainly the calls in last night's game did play a factor in how game five unfolded, because instead of being tied or even up after two periods, the Lightning were again down by a goal. And that was just, that was like a disastrous recipe for the Lightning in this series. They have to own the fact they gave up the goal to Verhaeghe early in the third period of game one, because that was a tied game going into the third, but the Panthers had a power play and converted on it. And in the other three games, they had it wasn't a two-goal lead. It wasn't a three-goal lead. It was a one-goal lead. Lightning needed one goal to get the game tied, and they were unable to do it in any of those four losses, which is a credit to how well the Panthers... They defended well, but they defended especially well when they could basically put a death grip on the game and get it across the finish line.
They're deep. You're right. And, you know, they did it without Sam Bennett, you know, for a few games. And he was somebody, obviously, that controlled play with his physicality and can get loose as a power forward. No doubt about that. I thought the special teams looking back probably was an area that
That was another key. You're right.
They just didn't take advantage of it. And the reason I say that, for as good as the Lightning were in the regular season, it never really translated to those numbers in the postseason. The Lightning were dominant in the regular season at times with their power play. Dave, they never were dominant on their power play in the postseason. And
their power play looked bad, honestly.
Yeah.
I mean, the Panthers' power play didn't have the same. I guess the Panthers finished with three because they added that one to Reinhardt in game four, and the Lightning finished with four. So the Lightning's percentage was actually lower than the Panthers at the end of the day. But even though the Panthers scored one fewer power play goal than the Lightning, I thought the Panthers' power play was actually, throughout the series, more dangerous than the Lightning's power play, which is saying something.
Yeah, and I want our audience to understand, and they can hit us up on X at Bolts Radio. The Lightning's identity this year, I think we kind of hit the nail on the head as the season progressed. It was a team that was top heavy. It got better with some depth by the trade deadline and players coming up from Syracuse. But for the most part, it was a team that relied on their high-end players, specifically Nikita Kucherov, to get that engine going, and even specifically a little bit more on the power play. That's just how I looked at them this year. In addition to, I thought collectively all three goaltenders had a hand in the Lightning making the playoffs, and I thought was a real strength. I thought Vasi asserted himself as, again, being an elite netminder once he got into rhythm towards the end of the year. But I thought it was a team that relied a lot on their power play. And that's okay if that type of production is going to continue through the postseason. But it never mirrored what we saw in the regular season. And if you take that weapon away from the Lightning, they became what they were against the Panthers, a team who was competitive, but they didn't have enough to overcome the power play not clipping at a certain rate comparable to what we saw in the regular season. And the Panthers, honestly, looking back on it now, their ability to make the Lightning uncomfortable on the power play was probably the number one reason for me why this series was short. Not necessarily that Florida won, but was short.
Yeah.
You know, the Lightning Dave, pick a series or pick a game where the Lightning had really a chance to seize the moment with their power play.
Yeah, other than game one, they had the chance to seize the moment on the power play in all the other games.
So there you go. Even if two of those turned out to be beneficial for Tampa Bay, we're talking about a different series potentially.
And you were wondering heading into the first round, and we acknowledge that while the officials tend to put the whistles, if not away, they use them less in the playoffs. Sometimes in the first round, you do see more penalties called. Lightning can't complain about the number of power play chances they had. They played five games. They had 20 power play chances. And they scored four power play goals.
It wasn't enough.
So that's a 20% percentage, which is like, all right. I mean, if you're at 20%, that's okay in the regular season. But it was when they failed on their power plays. They had a bunch of power plays in the first period in some of these games and came up empty, except for game four. When they got that power play goal, it really gave them a turbo boost. But they had two power plays in the first 10 minutes of last night's game. They didn't score. They had two power play chances in the first half of the first period of game three, didn't score. And then on the shift after the second one ended, Tkachuk scores to make it 1-0 Florida. They had the four-minute power play early in the third period of game two, couldn't score. That would have broken a 2-2 tie. They had opportunities on the power play, not just they had opportunities, 20 of them, but they had specific opportunities within these games to put an imprint on the game, grab the game. And other than game four, they failed to do it. And that was certainly a key as well.
That stood out 100%. The inability to control the game and perhaps the momentum of a game with efficiency on the power play. Maybe just as much, maybe bigger, maybe a little less, depending on how you view it. the Lightning's inconsistencies, maybe I'm putting it kindly, of handling pressure or dealing with the puck in their own end. Maybe it's called game management, Dave. Maybe it's called just being smart with the puck. However you want to describe it, I think what we saw through five games was emblematic of what we saw all season, was inconsistencies with the Lightning making good decisions coming out of their zone. Now, certainly we saw some of that in the neutral zone. We saw some of that in the offensive zone. Primarily for me, the ability or maybe the inability to consistently get the puck out of danger and live to fight another day was a problem all year long that never really got rectified. Did it get better at times when you saw Crozier and Lilleberg come up for a cup of coffee early on or later in the season that kind of settled some things down? I think so. But, you know, we saw patches of it, maybe even more so in this series against the Panthers, and they had something to do with it. But I don't know if it was all because of Mikhail Sergachev not being in the lineup, because I think some of those issues arose when he was in the lineup. For whatever reason, the system that they were running this year, I can't remember a Lightning team that had that many inconsistencies getting the puck out of their own zone at times. And I felt like it was something that ended up being an issue again in this series. And, you know, the one that kind of sticks out for me was, and it was a needless play, but I think this kind of goes back to it, Barkov, his shorthanded goal, right? The bad pass that was an icing.
It was an offside, but yeah.
An offside.
It was an ambitious pass on the power play.
On the power play, and I understand it's a little bit different, 5-on-5, but it's almost being smarter with the puck, understanding your limitations. Does anybody anticipate the Panthers having an offensive zone face-off shorthanded and scoring off of a rebound? No, but it happened, and it just... That needs to get cleaned up for next year, because I think that's something you can control a little bit as a team, how you play with the puck in your own zone, how structured you are in your own zone. But for whatever reason, Dave, it just never really found a consistency this year.
So I agree with you about the coming out of the defensive zone as a problem area. And while you're right, it was an ambitious pass that led to an offside and a D-zone faceoff. Last night, other than the third goal, which actually was Sergachev and Chernak tried to pass to Sergachev and he fumbled it and Verhaeghe stole it. And then moments later, Barkov got to the front of the net and poked it in. But even that one kind of falls into this category of defending, which is unrelated to, or at least not exactly the same as, D-zone turnovers, D-zone coverage. That hurt the Lightning last night. Carter Verhaeghe's goal to make it 1-0. He's left open in the high slot, takes the shot. He can shoot it. Vasi makes the save, but is forced to give up a rebound, and Chernak and Hedman do not close on the puck. And Verhaeghe gets a more dangerous chance on the second opportunity right at the hash marks. Buries it. And the Barkov shorthanded goal, that's a blown coverage. I mean, how is this guy so wide open when you have the extra skater? That bounced out of Vasilevskiy's glove too, so he may own a little bit of culpability there, but there is no way that Barkov should have been that open to put in that rebound. And then on the third one, which I just talked about, yeah, it was a turnover by the Lightning, but Barkov gets loose in front and pokes the puck in. So I thought last night it was less about turnovers and more about coverage. And then the fourth goal scored by Rodriguez, it's 3-1, the Lightning are pressing, they have a D-man pinch, and they got caught in an odd-man rush, and those are score effects. Like, Evan Rodriguez doesn't get that odd-man rush chance if the Lightning aren't down 3-1 in the third period and with it, whatever, 6 minutes left. So, I mean, that was more of a function of where the game was, but the first three, the Lightning have to own. And at the end of the day, it's the bottom line, the Panthers defended better than the Lightning. The Lightning didn't defend horrendously. I mean, they actually did a fairly good job of defending through much of the series, but they didn't match the standard set by the Panthers, and the mistakes that they made at key times proved to be very, very costly. The Panthers made them pay for those mistakes, whether it was failed clears or lost faceoffs or blown coverages. At every turn, it seemed like the Panthers were the ones to hurt the Lightning rather than the other way around, at least at the biggest moments. And I thought that that was part of last night's game, certainly.
You know, the goaltending was decent, although I thought you brought up a good point during the broadcast last night when Hedman scored his goal. I think that was probably a little bit of an underrated part of this series. I don't know if the Lightning generated as much offense as they would have liked, or at least tested Bobrovsky.
Well, that's a credit to how the Panthers defended. I think that
it is.
There's a reason for that. Yeah,
it is. But, you know, a lot of missed shots.
Yeah.
I think turnover certainly had a lot to do with it, Dave, because when you're turning the puck over, you're not spending time in that offensive zone. And I think that certainly was a problem. There were some positives from this series that the Lightning, I think, can build off of heading into next year. But I think, I don't want to say it's a transition year for the team, Dave. I do think it's a little bit of a self-reflection, and some decisions are going to have to be made in the offseason. But I do think the Lightning aren't as deep as they were. And I think because of that, you need to change a little bit the way you go about your business. And those habits that you need to develop need to happen in the regular season.
I agree with you. And actually, if you were to ask me, would you rather have a team that is buttoned up defensively but is missing game breakers, or a team that is game breakers and needs to button up defensively? I would rather take the latter. I think the Lightning are capable of buttoning up defensively. It didn't happen this year, and I'm not an expert on this. I'm just saying, when you look around the NHL, there are a lot of teams. I mean, the Lightning finished 22nd in team defense, so there were 21 teams that did a better job keeping the puck out of their net than the Lightning. There are a lot of teams near the top of that list that have way less talent than the Lightning do. Way less. And I mean, let's look at Edmonton as an example. Edmonton really took major strides forward this year. Yes, Connor McDavid had a terrific season and is going to get votes for the Hart Trophy. Fair enough. He had 100 assists. But I think the Oilers turned the corner because they started defending. And defending well. And Stuart Skinner became their guy, right? So Stuart Skinner was getting all this criticism along with Jack Campbell. Oh, goaltending, 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 goaltending. Well, you know what? When you give your goalie some adequate team defense to work with, and he's not under siege, maybe the guy can actually do a good job. And Skinner played well in game four for Edmonton. They shut out the Kings 1-0. Edmonton only had 13 shots, but they defended well. So I think that becoming a button-up defensive team is something that is doable. And the Lightning still have Point. They still have Kucherov. They still have Hedman. They still have Vasi, who in his own way is a game breaker, and that he is an elite goaltender. And I think that we saw the Vasi in the last 2 months, let's say, of the regular season. So you're right. They don't have the Gord line anymore. Like, that's just a function of the way the NHL operates. There's a salary cap, and when the Lightning were winning their championships, they had the misfortune, I will use that word, of winning their championships as the cap stayed flat because of COVID, completely flat. Had we not had COVID with the financial ramifications of COVID, the cap maybe wouldn't have gone up a ton, but it might have gone up a little bit. And maybe the Lightning wouldn't have had to say goodbye to so many players, but the cap stayed flat and they had to lock up some of their younger guys. And the result was, what was their 2021 Cup team? How many players are left? on the roster. I mean, it's definitely single digits, right? Yeah. So that was a little bit of bad luck. And they are not, you're right, they are not the same team that they were certainly when they were winning back-to-back cups or certainly the third year getting to the Stanley Cup final. But they still have an element to their team that a lot of other teams covet. Game breakers. And I think that it's harder to find game breakers than it is to get good defensively. That's my opinion, but we'll see what adjustments they make during the offseason. We'll see what kind of roster tweaks they make. I don't think that we're going to see anything like drastic. I mean, that's not really the Lightning's way. They may make some changes around the edges. Maybe there will be a player who makes, we'll call it more than the league minimum, moved for cap considerations or maybe just lineup considerations and roster considerations. I have no idea. But I do believe that the Lightning can get better defensively. Now they just have to go out and show it. I mean, look at the Panthers. So we say how deep the Panthers are. You know, like, what is their depth? Nico Mikkola? I mean, like, he's playing on a lot of teams that did nothing in the playoffs. The Blues, the Rangers, Dmitry Kulikov. I mean, he's been in the NHL a long time. He hasn't really done a lot of winning, right? Pick another guy. Nick Cousins. I mean, what has Nick Cousins done in his NHL career other than last year playing with the Panthers, where he's been a guy that's, you know, been on teams that have gone extremely deep? Stenlund has been in Columbus, and they've been missing the playoffs, right? So they are deep.
Yeah.
But they are deep because they play so well as a team and everybody is pulling on the rope and doing what is needed to be done to limit chances for the other team. But it's not like they have, I'll use the term again, game breakers necessarily up and down their lineup. And I don't think you want that. But their role players play very, very well in the role that they've been assigned. I mean, is Aaron Ekblad like an elite defenseman at this point? He's had a lot of injuries. I mean, he's solid. Did he like blow you away in this series?
No.
No, didn't for me either. The two guys that stood out for me are Montour and Forsling. They are high-end players. And the Panthers have some other high-end players. Barkov, Verhaeghe, Reinhardt, Tkachuk. I'll throw Bennett in there. I believe that. I'm curious about the Tarasenko fit. I'm not sure that he didn't strike me as dynamic in the series. We'll see. We'll see how he does as the Panthers move on through the playoffs. And Lundell is a very good young player. So look, they have some high-end players, but so do the Lightning, right? I think the difference right now between these teams is the depth guys on Florida are pulling on the rope in a really cohesive way and limiting chances for the other team. And that proof was in the pudding, right? They finished tied with Winnipeg for the fewest goals allowed in the NHL. So it can be done, right? The Lightning just have to go out and do it. We'll see if they can get better. That's probably going to be the biggest key for the Lightning next year. However the roster looks, we have some questions, obviously, that need to get answered, starting with the Stamkos contract and his status. But once the dust settles and we see what the Lightning's roster for next year is going to look like, can they get better defensively? And to me, that's more of a team thing than a personnel thing. Because what did I just point out about the Panthers? I mean, it's not like they have all-stars up and down their roster. These are good players. I'm not demeaning them. I'm just saying, like, they've been around the block, and it's not like they've distinguished themselves in any particular way on some of the other teams they've played on. You know what I'm saying?
I do.
But on this Florida Panthers team, they are key cogs for what Florida wants to do.
Yeah, for sure.
Stenlin had a great series.
He really did.
Face-offs, he was great really on did. Penalty kill.
Yeah.
You know, he had a few chances, scored an empty netter last night. That is a great pickup. But, I mean, really, anybody could have had him, right? It's not like people were talking about Kevin Stenlin the way they were talking about pick a player who has moved Noah Hanifin, right? I mean, but put him in this system, and he definitely fills a very important role for Florida. This he wasn't acquired at the deadline. He was acquired during the offseason, but you know what I mean. Like,
yeah,
any team could have acquired Stenlin.
This is Florida's time. Simply put, this is Florida's time. Is it because it's the salary cap and each team, if you're built a certain way, you get a crack to slither your way in and compete legitimately for a Stanley Cup? But potentially, I kind of think that's where they are.
Yeah.
And they may have a 2 or 3 year window where they feel pretty good based off of their roster. They can do that. Now they're still
going to have some hard decisions
to make. In the next
couple of years. Yeah.
That's why this is so important. That's a team on a mission. That's a team who has not achieved what the Lightning have achieved that want to get there. And they want to put their stamp of approval on the type of team they have. And the only way you do that is if you win the whole thing. And that's where they're headed.
Yeah. I'll say one last thing about this getting better defensively, because the Panthers have done it. But, you know, it wasn't that long ago, 2 years ago, the Panthers won the President's Trophy and they scored like crazy and they gave up a lot of goals. And now they score a little bit less. They do. I mean, even though they had a 57 goal scorer on their team. But they have bought in a way that they are defending at such a high level. They look very dissimilar from the team 2 years ago that the Lightning swept. I'm not saying that because they played that way, the Lightning swept them. I mean, those games were close too. But I think that was an area. Paul Maurice came in. That was an area he wanted to address. It took him maybe half a season last year to kind of orchestrate that change. But I mean, they've certainly been. Go back to the trade deadline last year, or the All-Star break, I should say, last year. From that point until now, you can make the argument that the Florida Panthers maybe have been the best team in the NHL. They are rolling right now, but they are rolling because Paul Maurice got them to play high-level defense.
And that's a buy-in.
To complement all of the talent that they have, which hasn't gone anywhere. Like, they still are very, very talented. So why can't the Lightning do that? I think they can. They just didn't do it this year.
Heck yeah.
Do you want to get into the
disallowed goals? So let me give you my comments real quick.
Yeah.
And then we can kind of get into what the rules say, what the rules are. I actually thought the second one was more egregious than the first goal disallowed.
Should have been a goal. Yeah.
Eric claims that there was some contact at the bottom of Bobrovsky's skates. I didn't see it from my view, and if you did see it, you really had to look close.
In the ruling from the league, they mentioned incidental contact. So
I didn't see any incidental contact. Yeah. I mean, to me, I didn't see any incidental contact, and I didn't see any way that Cirelli impeded the progress of Bobrovsky making that save. In fact, I thought Bobrovsky embellished by throwing his stick on the ground. You want to talk about a guy that should be getting an award for acting. Throwing his, and to his credit, I think that played a part in at least the official or the ref looking at that play and saying maybe we have to review it. Now, when you review it from Toronto's perspective, they must have different views. Because the view I saw, or the views I saw, I thought Cirelli, was he close to Bobrovsky? Yes. I don't think he impeded him one way or the other. That should have been a good goal. The first one, okay, you can make the case to clear skate, hits Bobrovsky. I think when that happens, any type of contact, it's probably going to get flagged in many ways. Do I think Bobrovsky still saves that puck? No, I don't. Somebody asked, they were making a comparison to when Bennett scored and was allowed because Vasi was knocked over, but I think you're comparing two different things because Tkachuk was pushed
by Hagel.
That's not a fair comparison. I had a problem with the second goal disallowed, Dave. I actually thought that was a really bad call. In fact, I texted you.
Yes, you did.
I said that's, and you know me. I both of us.
You were
gonna tell it like it is.
Phil was very fired up.
I thought that was a bad call.
So I talked to a bunch of people after the first, after the second. After the second, we had both calls to talk about. And I heard so many different things from different people. Some people were like, I felt the first goal was more likely to be upheld than the second. Other people were like you and felt that the second goal, by upheld, I mean count. Other people felt that the second play should have been a goal more than the first one. And as I wrote in my extra shift, no matter what your opinion about what the ruling should have been, and that may vary, right? We may get some people who feel neither goal should have counted. Some people say both goals should have counted. Some people say more this one than the other. What there is no debate about is that they were both 50-50 calls. Like, when you have this much disagreement, they were gray area plays. So here is, I sometimes smile, don't really say anything. I appreciate you when you say this, but you say, you know, on our show, we tend to be ahead of the curve in all of this. And in this instance, Greg, I really feel that we've been ahead of the curve on goalie interference. And I've told this story so many times now. If fans haven't heard it, I'm going to say it one more time. I even told it on the, it's funny, I did the block party with Greg Wolf and Braden Coburn, and they were asking me about plays that I'd never seen before. And I thought that there was one, I couldn't remember it, but then I talked about goalie interference and how I told a story about running into Don Kolarski at the airport back in 2020. It was before COVID, like January of 2020. And after talking to him, I felt like I was getting a lot of the calls. I understood why the calls were being made. And now I'm more confused in a way. And then I reached the point where I've come down with an opinion that I'm starting to hear after the game last night. Kelly Rudy basically said on the air what I have been saying for the last couple of months on the show. So in this instance, I'm going to agree with you. We have been ahead of the curve on this show. So what Don Kolarski explained when I ran into him at the airport, because I was flying day of game to Dallas, Don Kolarski was the supervisor. We just had a goalie interference call in a game. I didn't understand why the call was made the way it was. He explained it this way. If there's contact in the blue paint, the goal is coming off the board. Unless the attacking player is pushed in by the defending player. When you go outside the crease, it becomes more of a gray area, who established position first, kind of who initiated the contact, but the crease is the goalie's domain. So if you have contact in the crease, the way they call this play is contact in the crease, even if it's very, very slight, as long as that attacking player is not pushed in, there's no goal. Outside the crease, it's way more like the Wild Wild West. And it's goaltender's advantage in the crease. It's almost goaltender's disadvantage outside the crease. The crease is almost like, to an outsized degree, the determining factor of whether a goal is going to stand or not. Okay. So he explained that. And then for the next couple of years, honestly, when we would see a challenge, I'd be like, this is contact in the crease. I think this is not going to count. Or this is contact outside the crease. And the player on the attacking team had already established position. The goalie's trying to come out to make a save, but he comes outside the crease and bumps into the attacking player. The goalie's impeded, but it's outside the crease. I think this is going to be a good goal. And I was getting him right a lot. This year, I feel like I've been getting them wrong because we've had some complicated plays. And what we saw last night, the reason that both goals were ruled no goals, there was contact. And again, I didn't really see much contact either. But there's no question that, like, Sorelli turns away from Mikkola and turns toward the crease. So he does enter the crease as Bobrovsky is there. And this is the rule. Rule 69.1, which was the same rule used on both plays last night. Quote, goals should be disallowed only if one, and it's one is the one that they used, an attacking player, either by his positioning or by contact impairs the goaltender's ability to move freely within his crease or defend his goal. That's why the goals were taken off the board.
Now, listen, you read that rule perfectly.
Yeah, that's what it says. But let me just finish this thought, because this is where I think the league needs to address this. This is what Kelly Rudy said. Kelly Rudy said, he was talking about the Cirelli play, not the Cirelli goal, the Sergachev goal. He's like, they got the rule right, but the rule is wrong. The rule needs to be restated, because what is the spirit of goaltender interference? The spirit of the reason we have a goaltender interference challenge is, or the rule that a goal cannot count, was the goaltender able to play his position? They have lost sight of that with this crease nonsense. I'm going to use that word. It is nonsense. Sergei Bobrovsky had a chance to make a save on the Sergachev shot and didn't. Anthony Cirelli did not tangibly affect his ability to play his position. They have lost sight of that. What Kelly Rudy said is they should allow incidental contact if the goalie can still play his position. If it had been written that way, I think the goal stands. They need to change the verbiage. On the first one, which you felt, okay, Duclair, his skate enters the crease and kind of nudges Bobrovsky's glove. John Cooper was like, Forsling's holding on to Duclair. Duclair can't do anything. He still puts his skate into the crease. Okay, there is contact there. But Bobrovsky still can play his position. Bobrovsky actually makes a play on the puck with his stick. Sergei Bobrovsky is the reason that Cirelli got that puck. And that was what Phil was saying. They have lost. They are out in outer space on this thing. They are so off center for what this rule is about. Sergei Bobrovsky on both of those plays, in my opinion, was able to play his position, even though there was contact in the crease. But they are not saying it that way. They are saying contact in the crease, no goal. It says impairs the goaltender's ability to move freely within his crease or defend his goal. I don't think that they are using the spirit of the rule in the right way. And I will say this, the Hagel play on Tkachuk, Hagel pushed Tkachuk. Did he shove him? He nudged him. He nudged him, Greg. And Tkachuk lands on top of Vasilevsky. Let's use the standard. Was Andrei Vasilevsky able to play his position on the Sam Bennett goal? No. Capital N, capital O, exclamation point. And look, I'm not saying that the Lightning challenged that and lost the challenge. I almost think, like, take a look at the replay and almost forget about the rule.
Yep.
Use your judgment. Was the goalie able to play his position? Yes or no? So Matthew Tkachuk is nudged in. Could Tkachuk have avoided Vasilevsky? Did Hagel cause Tkachuk to fall on top of Vasilevsky and stay there? That's up for debate. I think that that's going to be a judgment call by the officials. But you know what? The officials make judgment calls all the time. This is what you talked about, right? Some officials call a lot of penalties. Some officials don't.
I just thought
they are adhering to the verbiage in the rule. Yeah. Like, it is so black. I mean, it is based on the verbiage in the rule. They are almost taking it black and white, and it's not. And this is the last one I'm going to say, and then I will punt over to you. Again against Florida. Regular season game. Panthers won 9-2. So this wasn't a play that won them the game, but I'm going to use it as an example. It's what, 2-1 Panthers late first. Forsling takes a shot from the point. Andrei Vasilevsky has his skates in the crease, tries to make a glove save. Carter Verhaeghe's stick goes on top of Vasilevsky's glove. Vasilevsky cannot raise the glove to make the save. The ruling was, even though Vasilevsky's skates were in the crease, his glove was outside the crease. Because his glove was outside the crease, it was incidental contact. Verhage has a right to basically put his stick there to try and deflect it. I'm going to ask the question again. On that play, did Carter Verhage's actions impair Andrei Vasilevskiy's ability to play his position? The answer is yes. Vasilevskiy could not get his glove into a position to make the save. But because it was outside the crease, they said it was a good goal. This is nonsense. The league needs to take a look at this. And it was such a high-profile game where we had two of these calls both go against the Lightning. I am hopeful that the league will take a look at this. And I think if they tweak the way the rule is written, we're gonna return some common sense. And I know you love that term, Greg. We were going to return like some common sense to this. We need to look at these plays with some common sense. And forget about in the crease or out of the crease. If a goalie is bowled over, I don't care if he's in the crease or out of the crease. It should be no goal.
Common sense is lost.
I went on there for a while. But
it's okay. It's okay. That's a campaign slogan, by the way. We need more common sense.
I know. In this instance, though, it's not like a bang-bang play. They can go back and look at it on review and make a determination.
Anthony Cirelli did not impede, did not hinder, whatever adjective you want to use to describe that play, Bobrovsky making that save.
No, he didn't.
And common sense, if that's the word you want to use, I think it's appropriate. That needed to be on display. And the fact that, listen, this may be a poor comparison, but every rule is open to interpretation. There's always a little bit of gray area. Jaywalking. How often do you jaywalk? I jaywalk. Technically, that's a fine, right? You're breaking the law. How many times does it get called?
Yeah.
I mean, very rarely.
Coop's point is they're trying to get offense in the game. And what his quote was, you know, it needed to be something egregious to take a goal off the board. I mean, if that's what he's hearing from the league, then he has a beef. I'm not saying that all plays with contact on the goalie should be allowed to stand. I'm just saying, like, ask yourself not the question, was it in the crease or out of the crease? Ask the question, could the goalie play his position legitimately? And if there was contact, how much did that contact affect the goalie's ability to make the save? And how much of the contact was a sell job by players like Matthew Tkachuk?
Sure.
Where, the guy pushed me in. I'm going to get up eventually. And in the meantime, the puck's in the net.
Sure.
Watch the play.
Mm-hmm.
Make a determination. If Hagel on that play had like extended his arms and like literally cross-checked Tkachuk into the goalie, fine. This was not that. And I think I went on the air after that game, after game two, and I was like, I thought that call might actually not go the Panthers' way, but it did. So we had four challenges in the series, and all four went against the Lightning. The offside challenge, that was black and white. The other three, though, people may disagree with me. I think that they could have swung in the other direction and they didn't. So,
you know, it's
not the reason why the Panthers won the series, but frustrating for sure. If you're a Lightning fan,
what's interesting is that, the goal that was waved off, that would have made it 2-2.
Yep.
There you go.
Would have been a whole different
back
feel to the third period.
Back breaker, Dave. Backbreaker. That's why I am surprised they disallowed it as well. Because you know and I know momentum and timing of those things often directly impact when an official makes a call. How many times did they swallow the whistle in the third period if the Lightning had four power play opportunities and the Panthers have had none and they're forced to call an egregious penalty on the Lightning? They don't want to do it. I'm very surprised, and maybe I'm just going to phrase it like this. The Lightning didn't get the benefit of the doubt on that call.
I think that they're just reading the rule book and saying, well, Cirelli was in the crease and therefore, Mikkola did not push him in, even though they were jostling. They didn't feel that rose to the level of a push. So
it's incredible.
Yeah, I'm hopeful. And look, if Panther fans are listening, I don't know why they would. Oh, they won 6-1, oh, yeah, all this stuff. Look, Panthers deserve to win the series. But I guarantee you, if these calls go against the Panthers in round two, those fans are going to be complaining just like I'm complaining right now, that the league has lost its compass, I think, on this. And I'm not the only one who feels that way. So I really hope that they revisit it and get back to the spirit of the rule, basically, is what I think needs to happen.
Let's get to a few questions now, and then we'll have all week to address some other ones.
Exit interviews are tomorrow, which includes the interviews with the media.
And we will be live tomorrow.
We will be live tomorrow. I mean, we're going to kind of see when the players are available. We don't know yet, but our hope is that we're going to be live tomorrow.
Let's take two questions here, and then we can sign off, and we'll get back at it again tomorrow. Andrew says, what are your thoughts on the two disallowed goals? I thought they showed how broken goalie interference and its interpretation is.
We just spent 15 minutes on that. We would agree
with you on that.
Yeah.
Christina says, Florida was the better team, but frustrating to lose with two ticky-tacky goalie interference calls wiping out the goals. It also frustrates me that they let so many physical penalties go to let them play, yet wipe out goals on 50-50 interference.
Yeah, it's about being in the crease. That's why those goals were taken off the board.
You know what's weird, and we'll leave you with this. The Lightning lost this series in part because they didn't dominate on the power play. They got their chances.
They did.
If you would have told me through five games, Dave, that the Lightning, how many opportunities did they get? 24?
20 for the series.
20 yeah. for the series? I mean, you're telling me, I mean, my math is pretty bad. That's four a game, correct?
Yes.
Based off of, you know,
and they finished at 20% because they scored four goals.
So if you would have told me through five games, the Lightning would get four power play opportunities per game. Now, I know some were shorter than others, but the average, I'd say, Dave, I think the Lightning are going to win at least two of those games. They lost the series in large part because their power play did not dominate as well as it did in the regular season. They lost game five because the officiating in many ways change the momentum potentially of that game.
Yes.
Forget it. Forget about the six goals. At the time the Cirelli interference call negated the goal, it was a 2-1 game.
Mm-hmm. Or even if go back to the first goal, this game might have looked different had the Lightning gotten a lead. Game four, they got the lead. They scored the first goal. You don't think that would have given them a boost? In fact, I thought that they showed quite well after having that tough call go against them, but it was hard to bounce back after they had a second call go against them.
Yep. We'll talk more about it.
Yeah.
It's what we do.
This isn't a Lightning thing. This is a league thing. I talked about that Boston-Detroit game from back in December. It's the same thing. Jeremy Swayman was trying to make the save, and Rasmussen's stick is in the way. And they're like, well, he's outside the crease. Like, come on. The goalie should have a right to go where he needs to go, to cut down an angle if he needs to get out to the top of the crease or just into the white to try and make a glove save. He should be able to lift his glove hand and try and catch the puck without hitting an opposing player's stick, preventing him from reaching the puck. That, to me, is the definition of the goaltender not being allowed to play his position.
Yep. We call it number one BS.
That's the way the rule is written right now, which is why I'm not saying that the rule wasn't applied correctly. I'm saying that the rule needs the writing of the rule, in my opinion, and my hope would be the writing of the rule needs to be tweaked. And the emphasis needs to be less on in the crease, out of the crease, and more on just that. Was the goalie able to play his position? Or was he, this is the word, interfered with? Was Sergei Bobrovsky interfered with on the Sergachev goal? I think this is why it sat so not well, unwell with so many people, because they watched the replay and they're like, he had a chance to make that save. he was able to play his position. Coop said he sold it. He dropped his stick. He dropped his stick after the puck was already in the net. So we'll see if that happens during the offseason.
We will see what happens in the offseason. I think that's the way to look at it. And we can talk about the offseason as well later this week when it comes to the Tampa Bay Lightning. We'll talk about some bright spots that developed this year as well on tomorrow's show. What does it mean for the Lightning heading into next year? And I know. Steven Stamkos was arguably the best player for Tampa Bay that whole series. And what happens with him, it's anyone's guess. You know our feelings on it, but we'll talk about it more with you for the rest of the week. Partner, great job. As always, I will catch you tomorrow, noon to one, and we'll talk about the Lightning a little bit more and maybe even look at the rest of the playoffs too.
Yeah, and we'll get into these exit interviews, the ones with the media. We are not privy to the ones that happen between the players and the GM and the coach and all of that, but we'll have some sound. Maybe we'll have some sound to play as well.
Talk to you tomorrow.
All right. Talk to you tomorrow.
Thanks, Steve Ersnick. Thanks to you for listening. We always appreciate it, guys. Stay with us for the rest of the week as we close things out. I am Greg Linnelli. You've been listening to Power Lunch right here on Lightning Radio.